Welcome back to the Arise Podcast. Jacob, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Roger. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. It's getting chilly outside. It's feeling like fall. I mean, I guess it is technically fall, but it's starting to feel more like it.
Here in St. Louis, fall comes a little later
right,
than the
yeah.
calendar suggests.
Exactly.
So and I'm, thankful the fall is feeling like yeah. it's here.
And it's up and down because it was like 60s Monday, Tuesday, then it was like 70-something Wednesday.
Yeah.
And now it's back down to 60s.
Yeah, it's Midwest weather is schizophrenic.
It really is.
It is what it is, but it's fall's coming. I have turned the air conditioning off in my house.
Exactly.
And it is not coming back on.
It's getting
there. Fall is officially here.
Got the hoodie on. Everything is just right on track.
Yes.
So we want to keep diving into our current sermon series, God Is. And it's a four-part series. And today we're going to go over God Is Man. So to start us off, I'm going to have Jacob talk about, so we had a little pre-service video about George Washington, and I kind of wanted to have Jacob kind of explain this correlation.
Yeah, so for me, George Washington is one of those people who stands out in history for a number of different reasons. He was a great leader and a general who did a lot with a very little, but there are lots of things about George Washington that demonstrate, I think, what is a pretty unique character quality in the history of the world, and especially today, and that is how Washington gave up his power at multiple times in his life. Very famously, at the end of the Revolutionary War, you know, people wanted to make George Washington king, and he said, no, I'm not going to become king. I'm going to step down. I'm going to retire. I'm going to go live peacefully on my farm. I have done what has been asked of me for the sake of my country. I'm done. I don't want any more power. Washington here followed very closely the model of his ancient Roman exemplar, Cincinnatus, who, if you don't know, was a Roman who lived on a farm and then was called upon to lead the troops of Rome in a war. He led admirably. They wanted to make him dictator for life afterwards, and he said, nope, not going to do it. I'm going to retire. I'm going to go back to my farm. He gave up all of his power. He went back to his farm, just like Washington. And then, of course, again, Washington, a few years later, is called upon to become the first president. No one knows what a president is when George Washington takes upon that yeah. role. Could have been dictator for life, right? Could have been Vladimir Putin, right? You just keep getting elected and elected and elected. He didn't do that. 8 years later, he again steps down. He voluntarily surrendered his power and prestige. And this is something that I think is, you know, super admirable about George Washington. This personally for me is something I aspire to in life. I don't ever want to hold political office again. But if I have to, right, I might someday kind of think about it. But if I were ever to find myself in that position, it's always something I want to be able to give up because I think power corrupts. And I think that's something that George Washington knew very well. And so he was humble enough. He was aware enough of the dangers of power that he was willing to submit and he was willing to surrender that power. And I started off with George Washington because I think his example of humble submission and humble surrender is something that can really help us understand the sort of thing that Jesus did when he became man, right? Jesus was also, as the Son of God, in a tremendous position of power, had a lot of angels on his side and things like that, but willingly takes upon himself the very humble role of becoming a human and, of course, living and dying for us. And to me, there's just such a clear parallel between the humble surrender, the humble sacrifice of George Washington and the example of Jesus. I really wanted to draw that parallel because there's just so much there for us to really think about and to help us understand kind of the tremendous thing that Jesus did when he became human.
So shout out to Robin and Andrew Brausch. They named their son after Washington. George Washington, his first name is Washington.
For this reason.
I wanted to give the shout out to Robin because she does listen to the podcast and she is extremely, I mean, if you know Robin, you already know this, but she is extremely, extremely encouraging. So she's always telling me how good the podcast is and how great me and Jacob are doing. And I just really appreciate that. So shout out to Robin. But to get back into it, it is so crazy because to have someone who, or to have people really be wanting you to do something like that, and knowing that, even before the abusing the power, like, I mean, you had all these people who wanted you to be king and be this. Like, you could have just, hey, a lot of people think I'm good at what I'm doing. Like,
exactly.
I'll just do it. Like, you know, like, I would, you know, almost do that, not even thinking about the other. So to have that kind of presence of mind to even think about, okay, like, I could see this being a problem and too much power. Like, I think that's pretty, like, that is pretty, pretty awesome. So I really like that. So I know we're in Philippians chapter 2, 6 through 11, and it kind of is talking about that, you know, like, God doesn't want to use, or, you know, he doesn't want the equality for, to use it to his own advantage, but he wanted to, you know, kind of strip down, become a servant, become human-like, humble himself. And, that's so crazy to even think. I don't know. I mean, it's so awesome that, like, you know, he wants to show that example, but it's just so crazy to even think. And I'm going to try not to butcher this, but I think the kenosis hymn.
Kenosis. Yeah, very good. Well
and
done.
So I want to feel smart for a second. You know, kenosis means emptying, but I don't know what language that is. I don't know if that's Greek or Latin.
It's just Greek. Yeah.
But I don't, if you want to go into that a little bit, I don't even know. I've never heard of this kenosis hymn title.
Yeah. So some of this is just some random biblical studies stuff. So one of the things that biblical scholars do is they read through, you know, the Old and New Testament, frankly, is they look for, how a biblical author uses other text, uses other sources. This actually was one of the major parts of my dissertation that I was working on. It's called reception history, how one source or text is received and used in another. It tells us a lot of things about authority and how people write and kind of theological meaning and things like that. And so this passage, Philippians 2, 6 through 11, is often times thought of as kind of an independent hymn of some sort that Paul just kind of includes, something the Philippians would have known, that Paul kind of includes in what he is doing, right? It'd be similar to if you were, you know, talking to someone about the theological concept of grace, right? And they're talking about how God is gracious and how he's amazing. And then they kind of, you know, broke out into amazing grace, right? As a way to kind of, you know, explain and further reinforce the point that they were making. That seems to be what Paul is doing here. He's using a hymn. He's using this song the early Christians would have sung about Jesus to kind of make the point about how humble he was, about the example that he sets for us in living humbly, and very importantly, how he emptied himself, right? Now, this is a huge theological controversy in early Christianity. What does it mean that Jesus is in the form of God? What does it mean that he was equal to God? What does it mean that he emptied himself? What does it mean that he took on the form of a servant? I mean, really, in these two verses, Philippians 2, 6, and 7, you have about 500 years of Christological debate in the church wrapped up into one. So there's a ton here. But as you were mentioning, kenosis just means emptying, right? It means laying down. It means setting aside. It means giving up voluntarily that which you have. And that's exactly what Jesus does as he comes down from heaven in order to die for us.
So I also was curious about, so you were talking about how, which I found this interesting. I don't know, I guess not necessarily surprised, but I was interested. You were talking about other religions and how they never were in human form. Like, so I mean, kind of explain that a little bit. Like, I just, when I heard it, I was like, I guess I could see that, because in my head, I would think, like, they would want the power, like, just in my head, the way I would see it, because, like, you know, I know how great our God is, but, like, I just really thought that was interesting. And I know there was some even little where it's like they would be inhuman if it was able to avoid something. Like, I don't know. It was just really interesting. Yeah. How these little things played out.
So, I mean, kind of the big, as we're in this series, right, we're trying to understand who God is, right? What is God like? And you know, when you're describing one person to another, you want to talk about things that are unique about them, right? So I was actually talking about Roger to someone this morning, and I was describing him. I said, he's an elder here at Arise. He plays bass on Sunday mornings, and he's a Cowboys fan, right? I didn't say he's a guy with facial hair who comes to church, right?
Yeah.
You have to talk about things that are unique. And so one of the points I was trying to make here was, as Christians talk about God, what makes Christianity unique? And this is exactly one of the things that is very unique. Other religions will say things like, God is good. God is just. God is merciful. God is compassionate. God is powerful. God is mighty. God is everywhere. God, you know, these are all things that one other religion or another can claim about their God. What another religion cannot claim about their God is that he became man, right? That he voluntarily gave up power like this. This is antithetical to how most world religions work. So Islam, for example, has some very strong reactions to the idea that God would ever become human. You actually don't depict God in any way, shape, or form because that would maybe give the suggestion that he has become human. You do not do that. In Hinduism, certain gods come down in the form of avatars, but they're always blue. And they're always very, very different looking. You can tell that they're not just a normal human like you and me because of how they look. In Buddhism, you can attain a godlike state, right? You can become like God, which is great, except for it's always as an escape from the suffering of humanity. So there's no way that the divine is ever going to become human because that's the reverse for Buddhism. And we can go on and talk about, you know, some of the other world religions too, but the major world religions don't talk about God this way. Even Judaism, which is of course the Christianity's cousin, even Judaism kind of hedges on this a little bit. Yahweh is very transcendent, but in Christianity, God becomes immanent. He becomes so immanent that he becomes human, which is just, again, very unique in the history of all world religions.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's weird. This is gonna sound a little weird. So I was sitting there thinking about it. I was like, man, I'd never, when I was younger, I remember when I was younger, not realizing like now thinking about it, realizing how much I didn't know about God's sacrifice. Like, and again, of course I know that he, you know, became human and died on the cross, but like even like, you know, going into the desert or, you know, weeping because his friend died, and like it's just in whatever, you know, even, I mean, I don't know exactly what happened, you know, 33 years up until, like, it's just, you don't think about, like, I mean, he was like, I mean, you can say he was human, but like he literally sat in that and like he lived our life. And that's just so, like, again, like I said, I always think about, you know, the ultimate sacrifice that he did, but like that is just thinking in that way. That's wild enough as it is that he literally came down from the right hand of God and was like, you know what? I'm going to be human and take on, I don't know. It's just, it's just so crazy to even think about that.
Because of you, God ate stale, cold dinner.
Yeah.
Because of you, he drank tepid water. Because of you, he sweat.
Yeah.
As he was working, he cried because he couldn't necessarily control his emotions. He bled, right? Like, these are such ungodlike things as you think of what the concept of God has meant throughout the history of the world. It's just incredible. It's incredible. I like to think that Jesus, you know, grumbled to himself as he had to get up in the middle of the night and go pee, or, you know, was had a bum knee or something, right?
Right.
Like God became like us so that we could become like him. And we focus on that second part a lot, which is good and important, but he also did all the things that we did. And being a human is not always a pleasant thing, especially in first century Roman Palestine,
right,
where St. Carrier, creator of the air conditioner, had not come around yet. Like, that's a whole different life than we're used to here.
Exactly.
So, it really does mean something that God came and became human like us.
Yeah. And then not even to mention, like, I mean, I know I say this a lot, but like meeting people where they are, like, I mean, even to that extent, like it wasn't even like when people knew who he was and knew what he was about, like he would still go to the woman at the well. Like, it was never like, oh, you know, okay, if you need healing, come to me. If you need this, come here. Like, I mean, he just, it's just amazing. So then I know where you were talking. So it was like, you know, if you want to, know who God is, then you need to look at the moment God surrendered. And, so God reveals himself through Jesus. And I think one of the things was, God is revealed in who Jesus is and what he has done. So that means if you want to understand God, you should look at Jesus. So, I mean, what do you mean as far as that? Like, is that prayer, reading the Bible? I mean, just example, what, how do you go about that?
So this is the kind of consummate, it's easy to read the Bible or participate in religious exercises or things like that and go, oh, this is the thing that God wants me to do, right? I'm a big proponent of, you know, catechisms as a way to instruct people. The catechism should not be your final guide for how to live. Jesus should be your final guide how to live, right? What scripture says about who Jesus is, what God communicates to you through prayer or open doors or the voices of friends when it accords through scripture, things like this, right? Whatever, however God is speaking to you, however God is communicating to you, it ought to be making you look at Jesus. It ultimately ought to be making you become more and more like Jesus. We should be looking at Jesus as the example of who God is and what he's done, because he's the clearest example that we have for us. The Gospel of John has some, Jesus in the Gospel of John has some great things to say about this. John 14, I think, is the clearest example. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father, right?
Yeah.
And just this idea that if you really want to understand who God is, great. We can get theological. We can get philosophical. We can talk about an unmoved mover or the moment of creation and all those things are good and fine. But if you want to speak as concretely as possible about who God is, you got to look at Jesus, because that's the concrete representation that we've been given.
Yeah, and you were talking about this, which was funny. You were talking about how that's how you do it. Like, you even can use that example with, you know, humans. Like, I can know somebody, like one of my friends, I can meet their parents and be like, oh, okay, that's where Justin gets this.
Right.
He gets that from Redenia. Like, you know, so it's crazy how that works too. But it's funny, because I was thinking about that and thinking, cause you were like, and the other scary part is that people can see your son or your kids and know.
Exactly.
And so I'm thinking about my son and I'm thinking about my mom. And I'm like, man, this is so crazy, like, how that really does work. And like, you can like see these correlations, and I don't know. It's funny how that does work. How, like, you really can, if you want to know God, you really can look at Jesus and be like, okay, like, he acts just like the Father, you know, like, that's just how it works.
One of the things I do every week as I prepare a message is I actually send it to a pre-message feedback team. I think most things in life are better when multiple eyes look at them and multiple people get an opportunity to contribute to them. And so I try to send a sermon usually on Wednesdays out to kind of a rotating group of people and say, hey, you know, do you have any feedback? Do you have any thoughts for me here? And Chelsea McKenzie actually had a really helpful point here. It's not just because we can look at Jesus that we become like Jesus, right? It's not just kind of looking at him or following his example. It's actually proximity that matters, right? Bentley is like you because he spends a lot of time with you.
Yeah.
Right? You're like your mom, not perfectly, you know, exactly like your mom, right?
Yeah,
no one's
yeah.
exactly like their parent, but, you know, we become like the people we are around
with. Yeah, that
Paul
makes
says,
sense.
Bad company corrupts good character. Good company actually helps good character, right? Like, you become the thing that you consistently do. You become like the people you're consistently around. That's why married couples eventually just kind of look and sound like each other.
Right, right.
But it's not just because you're intentionally doing it, right? It's not just because you're, oh, you know, I have this person I'm looking to as an example. It's because you're around them. It's because you're spending time with them. It's because you're getting to know them. And that's exactly what we're called to do with Jesus. And this, to me, is one of the reasons that it's so fundamentally important to not just do church on a Sunday morning, right? An hour a week is not enough for you to you know, experience significant life change. You're never going to lose weight if you only work out 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
You're never going to learn a foreign language if you only look at it once a week. You're never going to do anything meaningful in 1 hour a week. There's got to be consistency. There's got to be proximity. This is why you need to be praying consistently, why you need to be reading scripture, why you need to be in community, right? All of these things, the more you do them, the more they're going to help you be like Jesus. The more they're going to help you follow his example. The more time you are in proximity to Jesus, the more you can be like him.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I mean, that makes so much sense because, like you said, when you're around somebody so much, and that's probably a lot of the reason why when, you know, kids turn 18 and they move, you know, they start, you know, getting their own, not their own thought. I mean, you always had that, but like, you know, you start to change a little bit because now you're surrounded by other things, you know, it's right. Not just your parents or your siblings or whatever it is. And so, yeah, that is a really good point. So I know you said, I know you said God has revealed in who Jesus is and what he's done. So you should pledge your loyalty to King Jesus. Now, what is that? I mean, is that kind of like what you were just talking about, like as far as like just being around him, you know, like consuming yourself with him? Like, is that what you mean as far as pledging yourself to King Jesus?
Ultimately, I think it ends in a place like that, right? If you're really following someone, right? If you've truly pledged your loyalty to someone, if you're, you know, completely bought in to what someone is doing, you're going to spend a lot of time around them, right? You're going to become more and more like them. But I don't think it's just that. This is the, you know, pledging your loyalty to King Jesus is both kind of the thing that we need to do as an entrance into the family of God and the thing that we need to continually do as people who are following God. So, you know, I've been reading a lot of books lately, which is almost always true, but I've been reading a lot by Scott McKnight and Matthew Bates of late. And if you've heard those names, you know, they have one of their big projects is the King Jesus Gospel is McKnight's. And Salvation by Allegiance Alone is Bates. And kind of the contention here is the good news of Jesus boils down not to salvation, you know, justification by faith alone, which is what a lot of Protestants have done over the years, but actually a better way to think about it is the proclamation and allegiance to the idea that Jesus is the saving king. Right. And so there's a much more royal, much more allegiance based sort of language here where it's, you know, following Jesus is not a, hey, pray a prayer, come up to the front of the church and be saved for all of eternity sort of a thing. It's a, hey, are you following the king? Are you making a decision to begin following him? Right. And one of the points I made in the message was, as Americans, we are terrible at this idea of allegiance to a king because other than LeBron James, we don't have any kings here in the United States.
Sorry. Just saw this. I think it was last night. I didn't realize, and I don't know if this is even true. So I'm going to need somebody to fact check me. I wish we had a Jamie like Joe Rogan.
That'd be awesome.
To fact check me. But I heard that LeBron means king.
Oh.
And so I didn't know that. So when he's saying King James, apparently he's saying LeBron James. I don't know if that's true, but I literally just saw it like literally late last night.
My like right French I went is to bed. Terrible, so I have no idea. Yeah, someone fact check that.
Yeah.
That would be absolutely fascinating.
But yeah, sorry.
My mind is blown now. I don't even remember what we were talking about. No. So this idea of pledging loyalty to a king actually hits better at what Jesus wants us to do as we follow him. Hits better than just saying, make a decision to follow Jesus or pray a prayer or anything like that, right? When you pledge allegiance to a king, when you give your loyalty to a king, it's the start of something, but it's an ongoing thing, right? And that king is going to be in charge of you and lead you and point you in the right direction a week and a month and a year and 10 years from now because you're following the king. It's not just a one-time thing. So I would say in answer to your original question, Roger, you know, pledging allegiance to the king is something that encompasses looking at him and following his example, right? That's part of what it means to follow the king. But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And so my challenge to people is you know, have you given your allegiance to King Jesus? Have you decided to follow King Jesus? Not just once, but actively and on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. And I really like this. You kind of ended with this, and it really sat well with me. It was like, I think you're saying like George Washington humbled himself, because it was the honorable thing to do, but Jesus humbled himself in order to take our sin and death, which is like, phew, like mind blowing. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's something that just really like resonated with me. Like, it was just such a like, okay, like this is it. Like, I just really thought that was really great. Like, it's just, you can do it. And even to that extent, it for someone to do something like that, to humble themselves is great, but to really think about someone who humbled themselves to take on your sin, like, it's just like, it's a weird way to say it, but like, there's levels to this, know, like, it's just
totally next level. Yeah.
And it's just so encouraging and just so like, you know, it just really kind of puts you in that right mindset to be like, okay, I need to follow King Jesus. I don't need a 4-year term. Like, you know, like I need that Lord of Lord, King of King, like, I need that. So I really thought that was cool. That wraps up today. You can check us out on, if you want to listen to the Rise podcast, you can check us out on any podcasting platform. We would love to subscribe, a like, a comment, a review. Those really help us out. So we'd really appreciate that. Jacob, thanks for doing this, man.
As always, thank you, Roger. Really appreciate sitting down.
Yep, and we'll see you guys again on the Arise podcast.